Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Paul Hamilton. With Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
I mean, we're a long way from Watson on the field for the Dolphins or someone else this year. Still seems to me, like, to say the least, within the realm of possibility that he's traded but doesn't play anyway. But I did cut him in the Scott Fishbowl today for Nico Collins, so. That couldn't have been worse timing, probably. I'm not going to...
Perhaps, but I still would... I mean, whatever, I could lose a lot of money if I bet on all the things and bet heavily on all the things that I think I'm sure of, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers not playing for Green Bay anymore as an example from this summer. But I've thought all along, I don't see how he gets on the field. I don't know how a team even trades for him. I mean, it seems like something could be happening there, but it just blows my mind to think somebody's going to have a news conference and introduce this guy with that all that stuff hanging over his head. It's big, serious, heavy stuff.
I think at 1-5, like, you can do it because you could just, hey, that's going to play itself out. You know, the way these corporations talk, right? The legal system will play out, but they don't have to put him on the field. In fact, to your point, right. I think they really wouldn't, right? I mean, they could, but he doesn't come in to sort of get them into the playoffs or anything
that's
like that.
That's a way to make the trade then.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we know that we take it seriously. I mean, it's a sham, but there's a way to navigate through it if you're not rushing him on the field. I agree.
Paul Hamilton with us now. Paul, you have a thought on this?
Yeah, I agree with Bulldog. I just don't know how you can justify to your fans and everything that I know you're bringing in a good football player, but with everything hanging over his head, it's like when the Montreal Canadiens drafted that guy who in the first round, it was suspended. I'm sorry, his name escapes me, but you know, for the things he was doing, I think taking photos of women and that kind of thing and putting them out there and got caught doing it. And then and he took himself out of the draft and the Canadians still take him in the first round and then wind up regretting it. It's like, what were you thinking? I mean, did you really think I know you're arrogant and you're the Montreal Canadiens, but did you really think you were going to pull that off and get away with it?
Well, we'll keep watching that story. Maybe we have a trade. And Joe brought up earlier, by the way, like, what happens to Tua Tagovailoa in that situation? Good question. And there is a report attached to Watson. Aaron Wilson is the name of the reporter who says that there's another trade involved. And, you know, we talked it out. I think that might be right. We'll see. But it's logical to think that Tua would end up on a third team and not the Texans if there were this kind of a trade. Then maybe they would just go Brissett in Miami. We'll see. We can move on because it's not like it's done or anything, it seems. All right. Paul, the Sabres are 3-0. How about that?
Yeah, they are. Who would have thunk it? But
talking about things I would have lost money on if I bet heavily.
At least the schedule.
Well, I kind of helped you through that a little bit, Bulldog, before the first game. You know,
I know.
I did say, you know, if they are indeed better like they say they are, who's to say they can't pick up 14 of the first 22 points? mm-hmm. you know, with the schedule that they have. And so far, they've got six of those points.
Montreal, yeah. after playing the night before, this is going to sound like I'm trying to poke at them. I don't really mean to be. The shootout against a terrible, probably terrible Arizona team, and then last night. Well, what is your takeaway from last night? Is last night different than the first two games in some way? Is it better?
Yeah, because you played a better team. You know, and I don't subscribe to the, you know, a lot of fans are well, look who they've played. Well, everybody's in the NHL, and everybody has a schedule. And everybody gets to play the Coyotes, and everybody gets to play Montreal, and everybody gets to play Vancouver, and everybody gets to play Boston and Tampa and the rest of it. So I just dismissed that right away. They played a better team in Vancouver, and once they got their legs under them, it was a little bit different because they didn't start well, and there was a lot of pressure from the Canucks, and they didn't handle it well. The passing was horrendous, and they couldn't get out of their own end very well. They were turning it over, but then only that's the difference, though. It only lasted about 7 minutes. It didn't last the whole game. They didn't panic.
Yeah.
You know, it lasted for about 7 minutes. You got a couple of good hits from Hague, and then you got a good forecheck by the Thompson line, followed by a good forecheck from the Eakin line, and next thing you know, you get a goal, and you tied it up, and now you're on your way. And, yeah, yep. you left the period down 2-1, but you could see they had their game back. It was a deflection in front of the net that made it 2-1. And what we said is going to happen kind of happened in the second period. Now you got 16 shots in the second period. You have your game, but it took you 17 and a half minutes to tie the game when you were pretty much back dominating a team, a pretty good team, by the way, in the Vancouver Canucks. A lot of offensive power on that team, which the Sabres, for the most part, pretty well shut down. You didn't even notice them for most of it. And it took you 17 and a half minutes to get back. And then the third period, you get two goals in 23 seconds because of hard work. And, you know, you win going away. So, you know, I think, you know, it's a better win against a better team, which came out hard against you. And you figured it out. You weathered the storm. You figured it out. You started playing hard yourself. I mean, this is a team that's averaging over 37 shots a game and like 3.67 goals per game. Now, that's not going to keep up, I don't think. You know, I suppose it could, but I don't think it is. You
right.
know, that they're going to average 3.67 goals per game, and you know, they might average close to 37, 35 shots a game, just the way they play. But sometimes they need a lot of shots to wind up getting a goal out of it.
Yeah, I liked last night. I you know, I've watched all three of these games start to finish, and I liked last night the most. I don't think Vancouver's great, but they're, to me, the best of the three teams. You know, Montreal's lost without Price, without Weber, without Kotkaniemi, who, you know, they chose to not match that contract on an RFA offer sheet. I just think they've lost some stuff there that mattered mm-hmm. to them a lot last year. And even last year was sort of like a crazy run that nobody saw coming, and you know, good for them, they made it, but that doesn't mean suddenly they're a cup contender this year, Montreal. So I like this Vancouver team okay. Again, I don't want to elevate them too high, but you make the right point here, Paul, about some of the talent they've got and the fact that there was some adversity. You know, I mean, they did give up a kind of a cheesy, you know, deflection goal, not any, you know, anyone's fault, but it happens in hockey. Near the end of the period, and they still came out and just took the game over. And I liked that. And tie game going into the third, and they were vastly the superior team in the third period in the game, and I think that was really promising. And I like to see Jeff Skinner score a skillful, talented
Skinner goal. That's
goal.
Skinner
yeah, goal. I mean, that was a tremendous play by him. And he's a guy that if you want to start investing in this – actually staying in the air. I mean, they're airborne. They're 3-0. Like, we'll see. You know, I mean, how well the pilot can operate the plane with the cargo it's got. But if you want this thing to stay in the air, Skinner scoring is something that has to happen because they have a lot of scoring on this team. Just 5 goals in 2 of their games.
Yeah, another habit they seem to be getting out of, which is a habit they've had for a long time, is after a goal, whether they scored it or give it up, they have tended to have horrendous shifts for a long time now. I'm talking like for 5-6 years where it was always they get a goal, and then the next shift it's like you're hanging on hoping the other team doesn't score because they get 3 golden opportunities. It seems like they get all uptight. It's like, ooh, we just tied the game. And then all of a sudden, uh-oh. Well, that seems to have gone away, and it's one thing I've been noticing, and the 2 goals in 23 seconds reminded me of that, you know, they don't panic when the puck winds up in their net. the next shift isn't, you know, the other team's all over them and they're giving the puck away and you're hoping your goaltender doesn't make it two goals on you. Or even when you score, it's like, oh, wow, we just took the lead. We better go into a defensive shell and hope our goaltender can keep us in this game type of a mentality. That, at least through three games, seems to be a mentality that has left them, which is a very good thing.
We'll see. Paul Hamilton with us on the West Shore Hotline. What's interesting to me, I guess, if anything is about this, is that the players doing most of the good work seem to be veterans. Like, it's not a young team, really. I mean, you have a team that's expected to finish last. And we're just talking about the Texans. The Texans are actually very much like this. Sorry to cross sports, but the Sabres are not really young like they were at other times here in this last decade where they've been trying to get airborne, as Bulldog said. I mean, they're actually average age. They're older than the average in the league. Like, they're above average for average age of players. And you have Oposo and Gergensons and even Skinner in a different way. Like, right, Paul? I mean, if they're going, it's actually a reason why I would still be betting against them, because it's players who've been proven in the league for many years, not, you know what, I guess it's always Cousins, I guess, first in my mind, but it doesn't have to be him. Just somebody new who's like, bang, this guy might be great. We've seen that on other teams, you know, we've seen it here over the years. So, I don't know. Like, that's kind of interesting, though. It's cool for those guys that have been on losing teams throughout their careers here.
Yeah, some of their, quote, younger players have been around. Like, Bryson was in college for a couple of years and spent a couple of years in Rochester, but I consider him a young player, but he's an older young player. I mean, when you say young player, you're looking at Cousins, you're looking at Dahlin, you're looking at Joakim Harju, and the rest of them have a
Middlestat's out and Joakim Harju's out and Dahlin's at 200 games, so it's not easy to come up with this list.
Does Bjork qualify as a young player?
Young players. I don't care how many games they, but they're still young
players. I know their ages. Two of them are not in the lineup.
But where you get into it is, I'm actually getting to your point. You're not letting me get there because I'm actually kind of agreeing with you. Then you get to Thompson, who's been around for a little bit. You get to Olofsson, who is older and playing in Europe. Is still, you know, not the oldest thing for the NHL, but, you know, consider a newer NHL. Ristolainen would fall in that category, you know. So, you know, that's where, you know, that's absolutely right, where they're considered young for the NHL from the fact of their careers, but they've played other places to get up to here, and they're not like the Cousins or Dahlin or that type of age.
Well, the players I mentioned are even still different. I mentioned Gergensons, I mentioned Oposo, Eakin works, he's 30 if we're going to do it by age. Like, these are kind of the story of the first few games, I think. Gergensons has 4 points, Oposo the first night, and this is kind of, I mean, at least noteworthy, and it just sort of, that's where you sort of, or I kind of come to this position, or not position, just sort of the observation that it's not a team where you have, as we're both laying out, where you have young players like new to the Sabres, new to the NHL, the way, you know, other teams have had when they sort of blossomed, that can be expected to do that. They're really just kind of not here. And, you know, in a couple of cases, as we've spelled out, you have guys who aren't even on the ice right now anyway. So we'll see how long these players, you know, who've been hundreds of games with the Sabres, Gergensons, Oposo, et cetera, can keep it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, you have to agree. That whole line is, I haven't seen Eakin's whole career or anything, but you got to figure all three are playing the best hockey of their careers right now. I mean, without question. And, you know, I think Hague is probably playing a little bit better than he did in Philadelphia. You know, Pesek really has been lost for the last 2 years. I'm laying forward and hardly playing, and, you know, I've liked his game a lot as he's kind of getting a chance to play defense again. So, you know, yeah, there are a lot of players that fall into that category that, you know, are playing some of the best hockey they've played in a long time.
I probably should mention their goalies here if I'm going to make this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
40 and 32.
Yep. Right.
And the 32-year-old hasn't made an NHL team from the beginning of the year since 2015.
Right. Like, isn't it significant? How many players on the team would you call a prospect?
Cousins, definitely. I still go with Dahlin and Joakim Harju. I know they've played games. Asplund, I have that in my mind. Thompson,
Asplund.
I still have in my mind. Thompson, still, he's better this year, but you know, he's to a point, turning 24, where it's got to happen now. I mean, it's no more. Well, let's see if you know he can get used to things and everything. You've gone through all that, but I still consider him a prospect at 24. Yes.
You know, Oposo and Gergensen's had some moments with Larson, right? A couple years ago, because Larson's mm-hmm. been gone since like he wasn't here last year already, right? I'm trying to remember. The two COVID years sort of blend together to
yeah.
me, but. That line had some moments. They didn't produce goals, but they did a lot of good zone work. And so, you know, Gergensen and Oposo as wingers have some experience in that department. What's happening here, which I think is unlikely to continue, is that they're scoring like they're scoring. Mm-hmm. But that line is getting those chances and playing that way is the big surprise, because Eakin was a sinkhole last year. So, like, I don't know. I guess what Mike is asking really is, like, can you believe that that's going to continue? And, I think there's reason to question that,
mm-hmm.
but
absolutely.
There is some evidence that Gergensen and Oposo can drive play, at least. Whether or not they're going to score like this is, to me, you know, really highly debatable.
Yeah, I think you could go to Vegas and bet that Zemgus Gergensen is not going to be their leading scorer at a point a game by the time 82 games rolls around.
Right.
I'm not trying to insult the guy or anything like that.
Who,
it's just
who
I
is,
don't expect that to happen.
Who is favored? Who is the favorite to be their leading scorer?
I've been kicking that around since before the season even started, and I don't think I have a better answer for you right now. I mean, it possibly could wind up Darlene.
That's right.
Yep.
Or, you know, Ristolainen's a guy that can pick up points if he gets the opportunity to play on a regular basis. I mean, I think you're looking at somebody like that. But and Mittelstadt would have been a candidate depending on how many games he misses. You know,
yeah,
if
right.
it's just 2 weeks, you know, he could be a candidate for that. Other than that, I just don't have a very good answer for you for that.
I think Mittelstadt would have been my guess before the
yeah.
season started because of his position. You'd assume a lot of usage, and that would be what I would base that on. But
yeah.
He's out.
Same here. You mentioned Mittelstadt, Paul, and we know like he's out for a bit here still. What happened today? Like Hinostroza was not there, but that was a maintenance type thing, so he's fine. But Eakin got banged up, and do we know anything about that, or won't we know anything until tomorrow?
I still get squirrely with maintenance days, although I don't think that happened much with Granato. I think we can trust Granato a little bit more than some of the other coaches we've rolled with. You know, maintenance days all of a sudden turn into a month with some
yeah.
of these guys. You know, so we'll see. But that's what they – yeah, Eakin wound up flying into the post. And he was slow getting up. He sat at the bench for a little bit, then went down the hallway, and that was the end of him. So it was too early to be able to give us an update after practice. So they said they're still evaluating him, and they'll give us an update tomorrow.
Okay. Will there be practice tomorrow?
Yes.
There is, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They had Sunday off, so they're in pretty good shape.
I
didn't really, especially with a couple of days in between games. I didn't expect them to give any days off here, especially
Paul,
with three games and four coming up, and they will have the fourth day off. They'll have the next Sunday off again.
Sorry, I know it's still real early, but I know how I sounded about Tage Thompson being shifted to center as late as he was in training camp,
mm-hmm.
Now we're three games in and. Kind of seems like it's going well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah, it is. I mean, and Asplund's helping him out. Asplund was a center, you know, and they know each other. They spent time together in Rochester. All three of them did. Olsson and Asplund are best friends, so they all know each other pretty well. And, it has gone pretty well for him. Just what Granato said, the reasons why he was thinking about doing it and has been thinking about doing it have – blossomed into what it is, you know, giving him a chance to get into the middle of the ice where he has more options left, right, and whatever he wants to do. His reach, I think, does well for him too. He hasn't been bad in his own end. You know, I haven't noticed where he's killed them in his own end and his defensive zone coverages. And quite frankly, a guy who hasn't taken many faceoffs in the NHL has started off pretty well. And he took an important faceoff.
Yep.
With 15 seconds left in that Arizona game, he took a defensive zone faceoff and he won it. You know, so, you know, the different things, it's gone much better than I was thinking it might go when they first talked about it, and especially since it came so late in training camp.
I heard you ask. I watched that, and I happened to run to the store right afterward, and I heard you ask Don Granato that question. And didn't Granato say something about, like, well we got to find out what these guys can do, right? Like, I don't know what Tage Thompson can do yet. He hasn't played center since he was playing youth hockey practically. So, like, let's see how it goes. You know, maybe that'll change at some point down the road, but want to at least, like, get a look at it, right?
That's what he said. I asked him, I go, you're not playing with these guys, are you? I says, you throw them right in the deep end. I said, here's a guy who's hardly ever played center in the NHL and hardly ever taken faceoffs. With 15 seconds left in a tie game, you haven't taken a defensive zone faceoff, and he wins it. And he goes, absolutely. He goes, you got to find out if these guys can swim. And that's, I think, part of what I like about Granato. He's not afraid. He's not afraid to try things. If they don't work, so be it. Then we move on. But, you know, I think that's good in a coach, that he's willing to have some new ideas and then look at things and said, you know what? I've kicked this around my coaches. This might work. Let's give it a try. Let's give this a look and see if this would work.
How good of a swimmer are you, by the way? I don't think I've ever asked you.
I did lifeguard when I was in high school.
You were a lifeguard? Okay.
Yes, I was, over at the Y on Main Street.
You got to be pretty good.
So, yeah, it was I don't particularly like swimming. Like, I had a pool here when my wife was alive, and she loved the pool. I might have been in that pool three times the whole time. I learned how to, like, replace every filter and motor in the whole thing. So I got I got handy with it. But I just don't like swimming all that much. I'm not a big pool person.
I may call you in the spring since you're so handy with pools.
I'm around.
I could have lost the love for it this year. It was a tough year for me in that area. Thank you, Paul.
Take care, guys.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.